So in the previous episode, I shared a war story with you to help give you perspective from my experiences, to encourage you to look at your previous experiences and to develop some soundtracks or some ways to think about how maybe what you're facing in front of you today isn't really that big a deal, that you are enabled by the Lord to face it and to give you the perspective to push on, to carry on, to do what is necessary here and now. Another way I think that you can be enabled and encouraged to do what is necessary, to live boldly, to hit the mark now, is to have a longer term vision than maybe you have had to this point. A lot of you have had some discussions with several other men about this. A lot of you are tracking with this, but for those of you that aren't, I think it is helpful for you to have a 100-year vision and a 500-year vision for your life and your families going forward. Obviously, you're not going to live 500 years. And obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you're likely not going to live another 100 years. But having a long-term vision, having a vision for something bigger than just you and what you're doing, I think is helpful and will frame your choices or will enable you to make the right choices here and now in light of something bigger. Very rarely do people live for a vision bigger than themselves. Very rarely do they live for something that will outlast them if they aren't serving the Lord, if they aren't a high performer. I guess there's a lot of high performers out there that will live and want something to last and talk about legacy and all that. But essentially, that's empty if it's not in the Lord. It's not founded in scripture. It's not rooted in things. It's just, it's their soul testifying to the truth and them living out of something bigger because they are spiritual beings, despite the fact that they don't bend the knee to Christ. But anyway, this particular desire to live out of a 100-year vision or as of a 500-year vision was kind of fostered when I was listening to a podcast. I'll link it in the show notes, but it was a Patrick Bet David podcast with Michael Saylor. And I think I've mentioned Michael Saylor before. I may have mentioned this podcast before, but specifically they're talking about Bitcoin. But what really kind of hit home was, I think about the 10-12 minute mark of the podcast, he was just talking about stuff from a monetary policy. And he'd be talking about the devaluation or the inflation of currency and how if you have just held cash for 100 years, that it would lose, you know, 90% of its value, 95% of its value with the compounding inflation that had happened in the last 100 years. He gave an example of how the house he owned in Florida, he in 1930 sold for $110,000. In 2012, he bought it for $12 million, and that's probably in the $50 million range now. And he was just talking about how when you hold real estate, it can get taxed, and when you just keep cash, it gets inflated away, and how him as a guy that manages other people's money, that invests his money, was looking for something that would hold value. And essentially his conclusion was Bitcoin. This is in a financial advice podcast, and probably do a little bit more on Bitcoin later. But what really struck me is he said, I have to think when I'm building an institution, I have to think longer term. And that got me thinking, what institution am I building? I have an institution. The family, my family is an institution, and I'm a part of something bigger than just my family. I'm a part of the institution of the church, the true church, not Evangelifish Church, but the church that is seeking to be faithful and obedient to God's word, despite how popular it is. That's an institution that will last for thousands of years. And a lot of people that I'm talking to and a lot of people that share, you know, theological positions that I do is we're not even at the beginning of this movement here. This isn't, oh, Jesus, come back any second. Like everybody that's lived in society has had some kind of great catastrophic thing going on. And what we have going on right now, people, is not really that big a deal. I mean, in the history of the world, I mean, people that were alive during World War II and were calling this Ukraine thing a war, like, I got it. I'm not trying to minimize stuff, but I mean, goodness sake, World War II was a war. Vietnam was a war. I mean, even what we did in Afghanistan, Iraq, those are wars. Okay. Don't let the craziness of times, the stuff get you down. Why does it not get you down? Because you are a part of institution. You're building an institution, your family. You're part of an institution, the church that has thrived for thousands and thousands of years, despite depressions, despite wars, despite real pandemics, despite fake pandemics, whatever, thrived. Not because they're trying to get massive gains financially now, massive gains relationally, magic pills, quick fixes, schemes. Posted on social media a little bit back. There's no shortcut available for those of us playing the long game. And I want you to play the long game. I want you to build a vision that is for 100 years. And this particular podcast, Michael Saylor talked about how if you had held $250 million or what was valued at $250 million in cash in the early 1900s and just held on to it, it'd be worth $2 million, you know, roughly, with the loss of value that has happened with the currency. In a lot of ways, I think that's what the church has done. We had $250 million of spiritual capital, if you will, and we sat on it as a church. We traded it in for cheap consumer goods. We traded it in for affluent lifestyle, upper ascendant middle class, as Rory Groves talked about. We weren't seeking all of Christ now, all of Christ forever. We were seeking a little bit of Christ when it was convenient for me, and then more money the rest of the time, or more influence, or more popularity, or relationships. And we were idolizing these things. We weren't focusing on the right things. So what I want you to do, I want you to think about it. And this is what I did. I came in here, I'll maybe post a photo of this in the show notes. I got my whiteboard out and I wrote down, I drew little stick figures of me and my wife. I drew my five kids, and then I envisioned the five spouses that I am hoping that the Lord is growing up where they are. I don't know, I'm praying for them. So my son will get married. And I started writing the dates. I just basically assumed my kids are all going to get married the same age I got married. They're going to have the same number of kids. And then that's just going to repeat itself for five generations. So in 2035, my son will get married. He'll be the same age as I was when I got married. And he'll start having kids shortly after. And I'll be 52 years old. So I have, you know, kind of three columns, the age, the date, the age, or the people that are involved, and then my age. So I'll be 52 when my son gets married, and you know, my kids will continue to get married until 2042. My grandkids will start getting married in 2060. I'll be 77, and moving on to, you know, my great grandkids will be born or start getting married in 2085. And I'll be 102. So maybe I'm not going to see my great grandkids get married, but you know, I'm optimistic that I'm going to start seeing some of my grandkids get married. I'm going to see my children's children's children before I die. That's the goal. That's the vision. But if you actually see these kind of people on the whiteboard and them being represented in dots, so we essentially have, you know, 10 people, my kids getting married, five different families starting, you know, the next generation, there's five families that are coming from my five kids, each of my five kids, and taking that to the fifth generation, we're looking at 250 families being established per kid that I have. Obviously, this math is not statistically sound. It's not something that would pass a peer-reviewed journal study or whatever, but this is just for me putting it up on the whiteboard, a vision, looking at it, seeing the actual numbers of what would happen if we're faithful, we're raising our kids, we're not sending them off to public school to try to, quote unquote, have them have a ministry and help the other kids, and putting our kids in warfare before they're ready, and trying to reform these broken institutions, but taking them out, putting them in Christian schools, homeschooling them, training them, making sure that we train them in all the aspects of serving the Lord. And we're trying to keep all the people on our team. Ben Merkel said, the enemy is pedo, and that's why they're winning. They believe that it's important to start catechizing the kids early, to make them a part of things early. I don't want to trigger y'all. Theologically trigger y'all with dropping a couple of those things in there. But essentially that belief that the other side has, kids matter. We see where they are. They're attacking the womb. They're attacking the abortion. They're going after it. They're trying to take over education. They're trying to use these institutions that are broken for evil. They're not broken for the evil one trying to indoctrinate our kids. They're broken for us to participate in. Anyway, I digress. Back on track. When you look at the actual numbers for what can happen if you are faithful in raising whatever kids you have and having them faithfully raise, the math is staggering how large your family will be, how influential family will be. And the King's Hall podcast talks about this. I'll try to find the episode. I can't remember exactly what it is, but just thinking about how many Spearings will be around in 2110 to 2117, kind of when my great, great, great grandkids get married, 100 years from now, 2122, the year 2122, I'm not going to be around, but when there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of families now that have descended from what my wife and I are doing right now and the life that we're cultivating for our five kids now, it really makes a lot of what we can be worried about right now drama. The fact that I'm paying a good chunk of change, non-refundable due diligence money to try to close another tract of land. It's a lot of money for me to pay right now. But the reality, my wife and I talked about it, say when our great, great, great grandkids are sitting on this land, they're maybe seeing the barn, there's other buildings built, there's other houses, there's maybe it becomes our family so large at that point that they can't even fit on the land anymore. It becomes just the family reunion spot, the spot where everybody kind of comes and hangs out and gets together and does things. They're going to talk about how ridiculously cheap I got that land, because it's going to be always going up in value. And in 100 years from now, it'll be, the King's Hall podcast talks about how the guy that founded Guinness took out a 500-year lease on the property for an astronomical sum at the time, but for 5,000 years, because he knew his beer would be around, his brewery would be something, he's building a vision for how long it was, and he was willing to risk it now. And the fact that he locked it in, the fact that he went for it, the fact that he secured that lease for £50, I think it was, a month. Think about what that property is worth now, the fact that it's probably already paid for and everything, but essentially risking it now, going for it now, in light of the 100-year vision, in light of the 500-year vision, and realizing the compounding effect of your little actions now, the compounding effect of what you risk now, what you do now for future generations. And then I think as church leaders, We need to prescribe that to those that are in our church. We need to give them a model to do that. We need to encourage them to sit down, husband and wife, and plot out the 100-year vision. But then we need to take those 100 and 500-year visions of the 50, 60, 80, 100 families that are in the church, and we need to try to weave those together. We need to try to be strategic in how those all fit together. And we're doing that here and now in our community. Give a little plug for you to move here. If you're seeking that, you're seeking to try to make your 100-year vision and your 500-year vision something that is integrated into something bigger, because you're looking around and you're seeing a lot of weak men. I would encourage you to hit me up on social media, come visit. We have a fellowship meal at our church regularly and get integrated with someone else, other families that are doing this alongside of you. And ultimately, you know, just from one family, it can be significant. But if you think about 50 families doing this, the math is on our side. Time is on our side, because they're killing their babies. They're getting sex changes so they can't have babies. They're using a surrogate once or twice because it's cute for Instagram, and then whining about how hard childcare is and how do we do this? And there's no manual that comes with a kid. What do I do? Raise your kids in the faith, have a 100-year vision, integrate with the church while the culture kills their babies, while the culture doesn't believe that it's profitable to forego financial discomfort now for the sake of raising the next generation, the ones that are farming them off to the government so that they can be financially affluent, upward ascendant lifestyle. Forego all that, man. Do what is necessary now in light of that vision. Let me know how it's going. You got some feedback? One of my buddies made an Excel spreadsheet, and I haven't looked at it yet, but he, you know, to plug things in, maybe we'll look at trying to do that. I don't know, but if you have some vision or some things that you've done, you're one of those guys that's already even ahead of me on this and charted it out and is doing it with your church, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love you to send me an email of the framework that you did, and maybe I can distribute it to who's listening here, and we can do that. Guess a little tease. We're looking at trying to create that on our website here shortly. My brand guy, who's also editing this podcast right now, keeps deleting it from the audio because he said, we got to make sure we are ready to execute it. We're going to execute this, guys. It's going to be a spot where you're going to be able to pool this wisdom. We're going to be able to work on building these visions together, an online community. Just exactly what shape it's going to take and how it's going to be technologically enabled is still kind of in the works. Stay tuned. Sign up for our email list so you can hear about that when it goes. Follow us on social media. Keep listening. Share this podcast with a friend. I'll talk to you next time. Have a good one.